You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yep, rolling on. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. What are you looking for in the future here for the Seahawks? What are you looking for them to accomplish? Right? We get caught up in getting excited about one name or another, and I think those are always good opportunities to step back and try to figure out what you're trying to accomplish, what the goal is, right? What do you want the Seahawks to be? What do you want them to do? This goes back to a kind of an old conversation that Brock and I had probably, I don't know, right before I think Pete got hired. So when was that, 13 years ago? And sort of arguing for like, well, what is the philosophy? What kind of a team do you want to be? And how do you go at it full bore to make it happen? I don't know that I know that much about the difference between the personalities of some of these defensive coordinator candidates that are out there. I can tell you kind of where their reputation is, and we'll learn a little bit more about them. But I haven't met Ed Donatell. I haven't met Sean Desai. Right, I've talked to Gus Bradley, and I am incredibly fond of him, and I really hope that that name emerges at some point. I don't know Clint Hurd, although everybody who does seems to just say incredibly great things about him. But without considering names, as a poll I asked yesterday, without thinking about the names associated, what qualities are you looking for in the next Seahawks defensive coordinator? What are you looking for them to be about? Do you want them to be creative and young, and do you want to go in that direction, kind of the direction you went with your offensive coordinator, right? Somebody that was going to have a new view, a new school look on things. Okay. By the way, half of you out there said yes to that one. Half of you said, I'm just looking for youth and creativity, maybe some sort of a balance to what you see currently from Pete, which is, you know, an older guy, and maybe you don't see as much of the creativity in the scheme the last couple of years. Are you looking for somebody who knows what Pete's trying to do and can just, you know, add on to it? Very few of you want that. And I get it. You're frustrated, as am I, by what you've seen from the defense the last few years. Why would you want somebody who's familiar with the scheme to be the leader of this moving forward? The scheme hasn't worked.
Might be helpful to know what didn't work, too.
Right. Now, we don't know whether it's the scheme or the communicate. We don't know what part of it didn't work. I mean, to me, it's been a pretty successful scheme for a long time, but there's this narrative out there that the league is adjusted, the league is caught up, and until somebody evolves this thing forward, being familiar with the scheme doesn't help. And I think that's why there's not a ton of excitement around Clint Hurd, because unfortunately for him, he's just been in the scheme. Maybe he is much more creative than we know. Mm-hmm. Maybe he is a fantastic communicator and stuff, but I think there's just this fear that because he's been in the scheme for the last however many years, he's just going to be a continuation of some of the problem we've already seen here in Seattle. I asked whether you just want somebody who comes from a different background, right? Somebody who comes from a 3-4 instead of a 4-3. That can work for Pete. If you ever ask Pete what he runs for his defensive scheme, I know what he'll tell you because he has used these words with me I don't know how many times, countless. Anybody know what kind of a defensive front the Seahawks run? It's a 4-3 scheme with 3-4 principles.
Yes.
It's a 4-3 scheme with 3-4 principles.
You have told us this quite a bit.
Well, Pete's told me quite a bit, so I'm just relaying the information. And when you think about it, it is kind of true, right? Like the very, very basics, right, of a 4-3 is that the four defensive linemen are attacking, right? They're trying to shoot the gaps and get up the field, and then the linebackers fill in after that. The very principle of a 3-4 generally is that the defensive linemen are playing two gaps, right? They're just trying to stand up the offensive line at the line of scrimmage and let the linebackers race through and make the plays. That's as far as I understand it, and obviously I am not a professional football coach or anything close to that, but that's how it's always been explained to me. And what Pete will tell you is that his 4-3 uses some of the principles of the 3-4, some of those two-gap principles, etc. That's how I understand it. I think it has something to do with how you use the defensive end slash linebacker, but that's about the best I can do.
Okay.
Right? It's got the elephant position or whatever you want to call that now. There's a lot of different words for it. Willie McGinnis was one of the first kind of originators of that. The Leo, you'll also hear it called that. And it's just sort of this big athletic defensive end type. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of the system is built upon finding the guy that can handle being the Leo in a system like Pete's. All right? That's all I got on that. Communication with the players. I think that's awfully important, and that's another one of the things we heard this year was problematic for the Seahawks, right? That they weren't communicating all that well, that they guys were in the wrong place, that they knew what to do, but it wasn't happening out on the field. And I think that's one of the reasons Ken Norton Jr. is no longer here, because you're seeing mistakes made, not necessarily that the scheme was problematic, but that the guys were in the wrong place in that scheme. Well, that's obviously an issue, right? So if you're looking at who's going to come in here, then ability to communicate seems incredibly important. Mark Schlereth was specifically talking about that with Ed Donatell. It's one of his strengths.
Ed's a great communicator. Ed has great relational skills with his players. You know, I think he fits from the philosophical competition aspect. Won multiple Super Bowls as a coach for Mike Shanahan. I mean, Ed has done a great job in his career over time. But I think the biggest thing is Ed listens to his players. What they like, what they don't like, what they do well. The safeties over there, Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons, absolutely love playing for Ed. So I think that's a good fit.
So it's interesting when you start hearing some of those things. That kind of makes Ed Donatell sound interesting, right? I'll admit, when I heard the name, I was like, retread. Old friend of Pete's, kind of a retread, 64 years old. That's some of my own biases. I get it. And that was sort of where my mind went. Anybody else?
He coached with Pete in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been forever, right? So it's not like he's been a Pete Carroll scheme guy all the way through.
Yeah.
But anybody else, after hearing the first two names, Clint Hurt and Ed Donatell, go, not wild about this. Doesn't sound great. Doesn't sound like they're really making a lot of changes.
Yeah. Well, and Ed Donatell's son is currently on the coaching staff.
Here?
That's what I'm, according to this, what I'm reading here, is the son,
Tom Donatell,
defensive quality control coach for the Seattle Seahawks.
I didn't realize that. So there you go. It's a, you know, like a lot of things in life, getting a job is about relationships just as much as it is about what you are and who you know, what you're good at. It's sometimes about who you know, because the person wants a comfort level that you're going to come in and be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll admit that right off the bat, when I heard those two names, I was a little underwhelmed, so to speak, but I became more appropriately whelmed as I read a little bit more about Ed Donatell, and as I hear Mark Schlereth talk about him yesterday on with Wyman and Bob. Like, you're talking about a great communicator who is not from the Pete Carroll system, even if he and Pete are friendly. He's worked under Vic Fangio. He's worked under Jim Harbaugh. He's gone his own path for the last 30 years or whatever it's been. And maybe he is somebody who has enough of a relationship with Pete and enough respect from Pete to be able to have some of those conversations where you can give that independent evaluation. Now, this comes up a lot. This is what Bert Breer said to us yesterday. If you're looking to bring in a coach who's not of the same scheme as you, you have to believe that they can tell you what they think, that they can be honest with you, that they can challenge you. Here's Mark Schlereth talking about that.
There's always guys in your building that you really like and all that. I just think that coaching perspective, from a player coaching perspective, that freshness, that ability to disagree and not be disrespectful, but discerning opinions and finding a way to mesh that stuff together, I think is vitally important in coaching in general.
So that's an opportunity for somebody, and maybe it's easier for a 64-year-old Ed Donatell to tell Pete, hey, I think you're wrong, I think we should do it this way, than it is for a 37-year-old Sean Desai, right? So as you start thinking about, you know, what it is you're looking for and who can bring what you want, yeah, creativity is important. But sometimes experience and relationship is important as well, even if you're concerned that, oh, well, it's 64, he's set in his ways, it's going to be the same old, same old. Maybe there's a thought there that's a better opportunity to speak truth to power, right? So if you're unhappy with the way that has gone. Albert Breer had another great point here on trying to bring in somebody from a different point of view.
He went back and said, who frustrated?
This is talking about Sean McVay and how he hired a defense coordinator a couple of years ago.
He went back and said, who frustrates me the most? Who's the hardest coach for me to go up against? And it was Vic Fangio. And so he was like, all right, like, I got to find somebody who knows how to coach that defense. I want that defense here. And that's how he wound up with Brandon Staley. And then this year they brought in Raheem Morris, and Raheem Morris is from that Tampa 2 family. And, you know, basically they made Raheem Morris learn the Vic Fangio defense. It took some time, but now, I mean, you see what happened last night. It looks like it's clicked. So, you know, I think the key is the head coach has to have an idea of what he wants to do. And it's okay if you bring in somebody from the outside who has no new ideas. But I do think the head coach has to have that sort of concept of what he wants it to look like.
Yeah, so you can start seeing how you can go down different paths. And whereas, you know, Sean Desai or Ed Donatell or anybody else, you know, has their own pluses and minuses. Some of it's about the person, some of it's about the skill set and the characteristics that you're trying to bring in here. So I'm going to try not to jump the gun like I did yesterday in my own mind. I didn't really talk that much about it because, you know, just like the offensive coordinator thing, those were just the first two names. I didn't know what else was going to shake out.
Yeah.
Now we're at three or four. Maybe by the end of the day, we'll be at five or six. Hopefully, they're actually spreading this out and trying to figure out the best path forward. But whoever it's going to be, as I said, has a really, really challenging job to do.
Well, something worth correcting myself. Tom Donatell is with the Chargers now.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. First season assistant secondary coach of the Chargers.
So Had he been here?
For 4 years,
okay.
Yeah.
So there is still some of that relationship.
Yep.
If you're trying to turn around this defense stat, right? We talked earlier about trying to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years before Russell Wilson says, I'm out of here. All right. That's sort of the hypothetical that we were dealing with. How quickly can you turn around a defense? Well, Danny Kelly on with Jake and Stacey yesterday says, can actually be done pretty quick.
If you look at some of the teams that have really improved this year, a good draft class, maybe add a few free agents, like that can make a huge difference on a defense. That can really change things. You know, we saw what the Cowboys did. The Cowboys are a perfect example, I think, actually, because they had one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year. And they hit on a couple of their draft picks. They brought in Dan Quinn. He changed up the scheme, like adapted everything. And all of a sudden, they're one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, it's Danny Kelly from The Ringer, formerly of Field Goals. And, you know, all right, so you think you can get it done in the next 2 years. Fine. What do you have to do? I'm going to come back to what I said. First things first, you got to hire this defensive coordinator, obviously, and figure out the direction you want to go. Once they're here, and Joe Fan and I said the exact same thing yesterday. I laughed when he said it because I said it, what, 15 minutes earlier or whatever?
Does it need to know? Yeah.
Optimize Jamal Adams. First question for this defensive coordinator, any of the candidates, what would you do with Jamal Adams? How would you improve on our usage of him? How would you unlock all of the potential that is in this freak show athlete that we have not gotten enough out of the last couple of years since we gave up the farm to get him? That's step two. Step three, find a pass rusher. This might even be step 2A. I mean, like, honestly, these like that and the Jamal Adams things are so neck and neck. Both need to happen in order for this defense to turn around, right? And then this is the tough one. Cut or diminish Bobby Wagner's role. Either move on and use the money somewhere else and be, you know, find a way to be more aggressive, or as you're limiting some of the money you spend on Bobby, also limit some of his snap count in order to maximize his aggressiveness and his disruptiveness when he's actually out on the field. Because what we've gotten for the last 2 years has not been disruptive enough to earn the kind of money that Bobby's been making. And quite frankly, their defense did not downgrade at all when he went out and Cody Barton went in. So that's something that you've got to consider if you're the Seahawks and how you want to turn this thing around to move forward. And then finally, and this might be the hardest of any of them, finding a disruptive defensive tackle. It's a great white whale, man. Good luck. Everybody, I mean, it's like a franchise quarterback. Those two things are so hard to find in the NFL. Finding that disruptive defensive tackle who can do it all. You had it, obviously, I think, with Brandon Mebane. I think you had it with Jaron Reed. And since then, you haven't really had it. Al Woods did some of it this year. Some of it, right? When Michael Bennett moved inside, obviously Bennett was an example of it. He was even better because he could play inside and outside and be disruptive from any of those spots. And that's what you tried to get with LJ Collier. Hasn't worked, right? So those five things, hire your defensive coordinator, figure out Jamal Adams, find your pass rush and fix that part of what you're doing, cut or diminish what you're doing, unlock the middle linebacker spot or save the money, and then find a disruptive defensive tackle. It's five things.
Easy.
You think you can do that? I think you can. I think those five things are doable. And if you do them, now all of a sudden, are you in that conversation for a Super Bowl? Yeah. You certainly have the weaponry on offense. You've got a franchise quarterback. You've got a head coach who's been there before and sets the right culture. You're bringing in a new defensive coordinator. You got to get this hire right. I think those things are all possible. And if that's the case, you're not dealing Russell Wilson because you see yourself as being within 2 years of being in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But you got to go for it. Mm-hmm. You got to go for broke. You got to find a way to get it done. 7:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
What does Pete Carroll really want to do in this hire of defensive coordinator. We're starting to get some of the answers as candidates to replace Ken Norton are starting to leak out. Team, of course, making it official yesterday. Relieved Norton of his duties, along with defensive passing game coordinator Andre Curtis. Look, it's hard to complain about this decision. The issues that the team has had with slow starts, defending the pass, getting off the field on third down, rushing the passer, causing turnovers, finding out the best way to use Jamal Adams. Really, it's a long list. And when you start saying it out loud, it's shocking that this didn't happen the day after the season. So back to our question, what does Pete want to change and how does he want this to go? Well, much like the offense coordinator hire last year, the names have quite a bit of variation. Some are familiar with Pete, his scheme, his style, right? Others less so. Clint Hurt, the current defensive line coach, he's known as a fantastic communicator, has great relationships with players. He's probably the most up-and-coming candidate here. Probably the knock on him is he's been here, right? And unfortunately, what's been happening here hasn't been good enough, and it's what led to the coaching fire yesterday. Ed Donatell, 64 years old. He's known Pete forever, though he's mostly coached 3-4 defenses, and he's worked under Jim Harbaugh, Vic Fangio, etc. You got some familiar names like Gus Bradley, who Pete inherited in 2010. And I love this name that emerged last night, Michael Sean Dugar, adding 38-year-old Chicago defense coordinator Sean Desai, who's got an interesting background as a philosophy major and a PhD in teaching. I think he sees himself as a teacher, so he's an interesting dude as well. All these, or at least most of these names, have a relationship with Pete. Two of them come from other schematic trees. They range in age from late 30s to mid 40s to mid 50s to mid 60s. So all over the map there, and none of them, I don't think, seem likely to make dramatic changes to the scheme that we've had here the last few years. But they all seem like they might have the possibility of bringing some new ideas to the table. I'll also admit a bias for Gus Bradley. I loved him when he was here. I think he's a great communicator, knows Pete, knows the system, but isn't married to it and has done some other things. He's also had great success integrating Derwin James into that Chargers defense a couple of years ago. That's a player who I think has some similarities to Jamal Adams. I don't know if he's technically available because of the mess in Las Vegas, but he would be my choice for some of those reasons. Also, though, as I said, very intrigued by Desai because of his background in youth and creativity. At the very least, I think his inclusion speaks to a process that is considering everyone and not just some of the obvious candidates who are familiar with the head coach.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Another day, more national speculation regarding the future of Russell Wilson. This time ESPN's Jeremy Fowler included Russ's future in a much longer piece where league executives made predictions for this offseason. He's got an exec saying he thinks the team's not as high on Russ as they say they are and that they could look to make a deal this offseason. Fowler speculates on New Orleans, Chicago, and the Giants as a few possibilities. No, this is not a rumor, and I'm not rumor-mongering. These comments and stories are mostly interesting to me for a few reasons. One, they tell us what's out there. If an executive is saying this, why? Maybe they're trying to lower the market because they want to acquire Russell Wilson, or maybe they're just trying to sow some level of discord here in Seattle, or maybe the team's trying to get this out themselves for whatever reason. Secondly, it helps us consider how valuable we believe Russ to be, and I think they're a better team with him than without him. I think that's a final end-of-story statement. But as Albert Breer said, Russ may not be willing to re-sign here in 2 years. If you don't believe you can realistically build a championship team before then, you've got to seriously consider making a deal. You got to do whatever it takes to get you to a Super Bowl the fastest, whatever that path may be. Not an easy decision, but that's what's ahead of the Hawks this offseason.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, with the lockout still making major league transactions impossible, we did get some tidbits yesterday from the Mariners. They officially signed three international free agents using their entire pool on just those three players. Infielders Michael Arroyo from Colombia, Martin Gonzalez from the Dominican Republic, and Cuban outfielder Lazaro Montez. All three are 17 years old. Arroyo probably is the one who stands out the most. He's got a serious upside as a hitter, and I just like the approach of what they're doing. The farm system is where it is, one of the best in baseball. If that's the case, go big or go home, right? You can afford to gamble on fewer players with higher upside, and I think that's exactly what they did. I love it. As for what it's worth, Carlos Correa deciding to switch his representation to Scott Boras did not offer a reason, but here's a couple of guesses. Maybe he wanted somebody as soulless and unlikable as him to be his agent, or maybe he just wanted to maximize his value. It turns out none of those are actually true. I think the reality is he had taken a chance with an entertainment agency, William Morris, more of a Hollywood agency, and they have failed to build really any of a baseball clientele. They've also been at cross purposes with the league. for apparently attempting to purchase minor league franchises. The whole thing sounds bizarre, so he's going to make a change. Two games in the NBA last night only. Minnesota beats New York. Warriors back on track. They crush Detroit.
Sorry, I had to update my list of people Salk hates. Also, did you see some of the Kraken games rescheduled?
Oh, no, not tomorrow.
What's that?
It's tomorrow. Oh, so they're rescheduling the ones that were postponed earlier. Correct. Oh, that's exciting. Cool.
Yes. So I'm going through those right now. I just saw it was just posted a couple of minutes ago. But a Coyotes Kraken game rescheduled. The postponed from December 21st will not be played February 9th in Seattle.
Okay.
And Coyotes have a home game against the Kraken on March 23rd, so March 22nd. Okay, yep, that's
I'm
it.
I'm wondering if
there was a lot of open space in February because they left that open for the Olympics and then decided not to go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So they have some time to reschedule some of these games during what was supposed to be a break for the players. By the way, if you are interested in getting ready to watch the Olympics here in another couple of weeks, the Kraken's first round pick was number 2 overall, Matty Beniers, is going to be on the U.S. Olympic team. So while the pros are not going, you do get a chance to watch a kid who's supposed to be the future of this franchise, Matty Beniers.
Oh, cool.
Michigan hockey player this year, and he will be playing for the U.S. Olympic team. So that's something we should definitely be tuning into if you are a Kraken fan, kind of looking forward to the future because, well, that's where the excitement is right now, not with the current team, which seems to be having there.
And Davy Jones is the most exciting thing that we've had in a couple weeks.
God, everybody loves him, huh?
Yeah. I mean, how could you not?
What's not to love?
If you don't love Davy Jones, we're not friends.
Well, that's Mark Giordano. He's Team Cat. Do you think that Davy Jones, the new team dog of the Kraken, he's a 4-month-old husky pup. Do you think that he can win over Mark Giordano just with his sheer electricity and cuteness?
Yes.
Unless he has a heart of stone.
I don't know. Cat people make me nervous. I always worry that they can't be won over. Like, they've already, talk about soulless and evil. Like, I feel like they've already kind of gone down that road as cat people. And I don't know whether you can bring them back from the depths. Like, I feel like it may be too late for them.
Good pun.
I'm just not a cat person. What was the pun in there?
Back from the depths.
Oh, the Kraken. Yeah, that was definitely not a pun on purpose. Maybe you need to go see Dr. Rick. Maybe it's a you problem more than a me thing. So, as we talk through some of those defensive coordinator things, you have a sense of what it is you want from the DC. Is it communication? Is it an ability to stand up to Pete? Is it coming from another system? Is it creativity? Where do you go with that?
I voted on your Twitter poll. I went different scheme than Pete Carroll, okay. And I am in the minority, clearly. Number 1, youth creativity. Number 2, communication with players. Number 3 was where mine went. And I don't know. Something about different scheme than Pete Carroll just seems like we've tried a lot of right to let's try some wrong. See how it goes.
I think there is some of that, right? And just trying to bring in somebody with a different point of view. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to
but
that.
But you're right. You've got to be able to stand up to Pete in order to do that.
Yeah. Texter here says, Salk, does using all that international money take us out on Suzuki? No. Different pool. So the international pool of money, if I understand it here, I don't think it does. I thought this was just for amateur free agents, and my understanding is that Suzuki would be in a different spot, but I may be wrong about that. Let me check that out and see if I can come back and get an answer on that, because I thought that the answer was that this comes from a different spot, but let me go check on that, because now as I'm saying it, it's not sounding like 100% right in my mind. This is like doing math on the air. Don't ever do it. It's not a good sign. I will tell you that coming up in a few minutes. Plus, where are we going today, Justin? We're taking a look behind the scenes in Roger Goodell's office? Is that right?
Roger Goodell somehow had his voicemails leaked, so we got him.
Never a good sign. We'll see where it goes next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Tommy Lee's the most underrated drummer of his time. That's right, I said it.
Underrated?
Yeah.
I don't know how many people are underrating Tommy Lee.
I feel like Tommy Lee gets a lot of credit for being...
Other things.
For being sort of a...
Another thing.
A celebrity and all of that, but... He's a really great drummer. I think he's such a creative, interesting, phenomenal drummer. I love listening to him. All right, Justin, it was an interesting week for the NFL, right? They had essentially a run of bad games, some officiating issues, certainly in the game that made you so happy. And then at the end of the Dallas game, there were some kind of question marks there as well, but whether everything went the right way, although I guess it did. So it's always a good time to check in and see maybe what's going on in the league commissioner's office.
Yeah, so this one, I don't know who had something to gain from this, but somehow somebody got a hold of all Roger Goodell's voicemails and sent them our way. So this is definitely a peek into, you know, behind the curtain as to how the commissioner seems to live his life.
Lucky us.
More, I have sound. I just want to make sure that I got sound. Do I got sound? Okay, we're good to go. Here we go.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Howdy, Roger. Jerry Jones.
of the Dallas Cowboys. First, I want to apologize for leaving y'all in the hallway outside my suite at Sunday's game. But by halftime, I was mad enough to start a fight in an empty house. You understand? Number two, I look forward to hearing how you plan on holding the officials accountable for their unacceptable performance, because they seemed about as crooked as a dog's hind leg. You got till 1 p.m. to get back to me, or you can kiss your next weekly check goodbye. You can hang your hat on that.
It's very Texas.
Very.
He sounded like Yosemite Sam.
Yeah. He did little foghorn leghorn.
He's a hick, but I didn't realize he was that much of a hick. That's good.
Yeah. I love it.
You can hang your hat Jones. On that. All right, good.
Crooked as a dog hind leg. this one was quite a surprise, too. I think out of all of these, this is the most surprising one that I found on his voicemails.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hello, Mr. Goodell. John Elway calling to follow up on my proposal to buy the Denver Broncos, a team that some might say I've already owned since 1983 when I began my Hall of Fame career here. I also heard the third best quarterback in Broncos history, Peyton Manning, was interested in buying the team, and I saw you cozying up to him and Eli on the Manning cast. But listen, I've been quarterback, I've been a GM, president of operations. The next natural move in my winning evolution is to be owner. So let's not give the good people of Denver John Elway light when they can have the real thing forever.
He called Peyton the third best quarterback in their history?
I don't know who he thinks the second is. I have a pretty good idea who he thinks the first best is.
Who do you think he thinks second is?
Tim Your Tebow, is probably.
Yeah, it could be Tebow.
What was
Paxton Lynch, maybe.
Was it Morton? Was that the guy they had years ago? Something Morton, I think, brought them maybe even to a Super Bowl with the Orange Crush
Charlie
defense.
Morton, is that right?
Charlie Morton's the baseball
That's
pitcher.
Right. Why am I thinking of
I don't know. I don't remember his name. Morton. It's a little bit before
Kyle
my time.
Kyle Orton.
Kyle Orton, the old Chicago Bears quarterback?
Did he play for the Broncos for a second?
He might have, but he didn't bring him to a Super Bowl.
No.
I don't know. I'd be curious to know who he thinks is number two.
I know. He definitely doesn't seem to be a fan of Peyton Manning.
Jake Plummer, Brock Osweiler, Trevor Simmons. There's a long line of mediocre.
Yeah, Paxton Lynch, yep.
Broncos quarterbacks ranked, perhaps, will be a segment later today.
Start with that one. Yeah, okay. Wow.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, boss. ESPN insider Adam Schefter calling to verify some details of a huge brewing story that I've been working on for the last 15 seconds. My sources are telling me that the NFL made so many millions on the expanded playoffs that you're considering adding two more teams next year, regardless of how bad the competition is on the field. Sorry, boss. Gotta go. The burner phone that Russell Wilson's agent mailed me is ringing again.
It's a little Nokia. It's weird.
It's a really old phone that he carries with
him. Why would he have that?
Well, he's got to have a lot of different, a lot of phones.
He's
right?
Juggling he's... a lot of, he's got a lot of people who's trying to get a hold of him all day. Nobody wants a busy signal. They all got to have their own line, I guess.
Clearly. By the way, Craig Morton was who I was
Craig Morton?
Of. Craig Morton played for the Broncos, yes.
Man, I cannot remember that one at all.
Well, it was before my time, so yeah. He played 18 years with the Cowboys and the Broncos.
Okay. Maybe that's the second best quarterback in Broncos history. That's who you're saying?
Maybe, I guess. It was probably, honestly, it probably was him. Yeah.
Oh, this one could make some people upset.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, Kamish. I hope you're doing great. It's Russell Wilson here. Just confirming we're still good for 5 seats directly next to you at the Super Bowl in Los Angeles in a few weeks. You know, just really looking forward to seeing 2 great teams in a great city, great stadium. Of course, the Seahawks are also a great team, and I love being in Seattle, you know. Playing in front of such great fans and Lumen Field and fighting every game for a win. Always competing out there with my guys, you know. But I'm also excited to watch some great quarterbacks. Throw to some really great receivers. Of course, you know how much I love throwing to DK, and Tyler, and Freddie, and D, and all those guys are great too. And I couldn't do it without an incredible offensive line. You know, started with Dwayne and Kyle and Ethan and Gabe and all those guys up front. Damian and Jake.
Sorry you were having trouble. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Oh, man. He just names
Always
everybody,
got to mention
huh?
all those players. Just can't leave anyone out.
He just needs his seats, and I think it's a big deal. That one doesn't seem as much of an expose into Roger Goodell's voice.
No, it's really just a perfect encapsulation of Russell Wilson. He gets grief for that, for mentioning everybody.
Yeah, he does a little bit of like the NASCAR driver sponsorship
bit,
type stuff in
right,
every press game.
Right.
Yeah, press
I just want to thank everybody here with the 48 Low Chevy team and everything that we got done, right? Sure, yes, he does do that. But like the flip side is, you mention 4 and leave 1 out,
And now all of a sudden you got a problem, right? Like, hey, we go through this in our house, right? So kids going to have a birthday party, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't want to do a whole big birthday party, COVID, this and that, parents, kids. So, all right, we're just going to have three kids over. Three kids go do something. Well, what about the fourth kid?
Yeah.
What about the fifth kid? What about the sixth? I mean, like, where do you draw those lines? And I think that's kind of where Russ is. It's like he treats those offensive linemen like his kid's having a birthday.
It's MySpace top eight. Right. It's an important thing. You got to make sure you put your best friends. Do you remember the MySpace top eight?
I don't. I never really got too into MySpace.
I do, but I didn't. I like refused to get one, and someone made me one.
Mara was too cool.
And then
for
it was
MySpace.
It was just what I feared. Like, I would go into work at the bar I worked at, and someone from work is like, "I sent you a MySpace message. You didn't respond." I'm like, "I saw you 5 hours ago. What? I don't understand."
What did top eight mean? It was like your top eight favorite friends.
Yeah, there was like on your profile.
You're my friend, but this is my best friend.
Your top eight friends were, I assume, your best friends. Except nobody wanted to pick their best friends, so they put like the band MySpace pages as their top eight.
What?
Tom was always in your first top friend.
It's
in your
amazing
top eight.
That this
top
didn't
eight
work
friends
out.
Ranked.
Top eight friends. Yes. Defunct social media websites ranked.
Friends of mine ranked. Seems like a pretty poor idea.
Oh, no.
So, by the way, Craig Morton did some interesting things. Okay. Let me just quickly. He was the first player in history to start a Super Bowl for two different teams.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that's not nothing. I was right. He did start a Super Bowl for the Broncos. They lost.
I'm sorry. I lived in Colorado for a long time. There was no quarterback before John Elway.
Oh, really?
According to Denver fans.
According to law.
And John Elway. Oh, we got one more.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, Mike Salk here. I still want to wish you a belated Happy New Year. What a weak wildcard weekend. I don't mean to kind of, I feel like everyone is talking all about this one play at the end of the Dallas game. And like, yeah, all right, it was a bad play. It was arguably the most interesting thing that happened all weekend. But it didn't lose the Cowboys the game. They were going to lose the game anyway. The first game of the weekend with Cincinnati finding a way to beat the Raiders late was probably the best game. That was the best game of the weekend? That's just kind of a weak wildcard weekend, I thought. P.U.
Wow. How did you get Roger Goodell's phone number?
I'm a very big deal, and yeah.
Wow.
Clayton gave it to me, actually,
quite
years
ago.
What
a gripe you have with him.
You don't even ask for anything? You just call and leave complaining voicemails?
I would. There's plenty of things I could complain about over the years. I certainly have complained about Goodell in any number of ways.
No demands for him, though.
No, I just wanted to complain about Wildcard Weekend. Like, hey, fix this, Roger. Make this better. Quit talking to Jerry Jones and come fix Wildcard Weekend.
I like how your sign-off was P.U. You.
See ya.
That's what I say whenever I talk to Roger Goodell. I always, that's like, it's like Salk out. P.U. is what I say to Goodell on the way out the door. Brock Heward's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Heward is my hero.
What Brock Heward says?
No, he's not a villain.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hello, sir. How are we doing this morning?
What's cooking on this Wednesday?
Well, we got some new names. We're kind of thinking about defensive coordinators. As the names come in, I'm actually kind of backing away from names and trying to figure out philosophy or kind of qualities.
That's a sulky way.
Of course it is.
Yeah, I'm not talking about names. I'm talking about who you want as head coach, but what kind of style? I don't know, Mike. A style that wins? No. Don't give me an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of our good first fights that we ever got in way back when.
One of our first fights. So
I think it was. That was after, right, Holmgren firing and or Mora firing.
Mora firing. I wasn't Mora here firing. When they fired Holmgren.
Okay, so Mora firing and, trying to figure out what kind of guy we want next. And we all wanted Pete Carroll. I mean, it's very clear.
Yeah, it's the first name on all of our lips, of course, was Pete. Well, let me ask you then, what qualities are you looking for out of the defensive coordinator spot? Because of the names you look at, they represent some very different strengths and weaknesses. Now, taking the names out of it for now, what qualities do you want Pete to be looking for in that spot? Is it creativity? Is it outside? Is it young? Is it old?
I think young and creativity is how I voted in your poll. Is that still leading your poll?
By a landslide, 50%.
By a landslide. Yeah, I think folks just want that. I think that's a little... Gus Bradley, you know, would fit in that. It's not like I'm looking for a 20-something. I'm not looking for a 30-something. I'm looking for just somebody, though, that can command and challenge that room. I think this Gen Z, Mike, the more that I'm around college football and I've watched organizations at that level do it, and we're starting to see that even at the NFL level filter in, that, you know, this is a generation you've got to relate to. You've got to be able to tell why. If you want them to run through that wall, you've got to have their backing. You've got to have a connection with them. And that's not to say the old guard can't get it done. I mean, Bill Belichick still pretty remarkable coach. He does it a little bit differently, but I think if on an attribute scale, if I'm sitting in on that committee, yeah, I think just young and hungry and a connector, especially defensively. I think offensively, your scheme, your style, your smarts, your intuition. I think a lot of and experience. I want experience offensively a little bit. And we saw Shane Waldron. I think his experience climbing that learning curve, he was at his best last month of the year with a healthy QB. I don't know if that's as critical for me defensively as it is, oh my gosh, man, I am willing to just lay everything on the line for this guy because I love him. You know, I want to play hard for him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've sort of heard three or four names that have emerged so far. And I'll confess, yesterday I was a little underwhelmed when I heard Ed Donatell and Clint Hurt. And it's not really either of their faults. I mean, Hurt, unfortunately, gets hurt by the fact that he is here, right? And I think when you've lost a coordinator to a promotion, like with Gus Bradley or Dan Quinn,
yes,
you want to stay internal. You want to keep the whole thing going.
Yes.
When you lose a coordinator because you've terminated them, it's a little harder to bring up somebody who was under them because you're looking for some sort of a change, right?
And whose position group was as Jekyll and Hyde as any the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think part of the reason of this termination and this move was it's like these college coaches I talked to, especially, well, football and basketball, and they're like, I can't watch a highlight reel. Like in this day and age, man, all the technology, any kid can put together a 3-4 minute highlight reel where they're like, dude, this guy's amazing. Like, look at this. This is a great play. Like, great play. Wow. You got to watch the whole game. You got to see the big picture. You got to take in all the context. You could put a highlight reel of Ken Norton stuff, and he had stretches where they were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, man, Jamal Adams breaks the all-time sack record for a defensive back in the second half of 2020. And this year, yeah, you know, your red zone defense was epic, and you gave up a ton of yards, but your points per game were tremendous. And you could start to put that together. But if you look at Clint Hurt's unit, I mean, can't you say as much Jekyll and Hyde as the defense was the last 2 years? His group flipped that switch on and off as much as anyone?
Yep, I do. And again, if one of the first things you want to ask this person is, how are you going to figure out how to use Jamal Adams and get the most out of this enormous investment you've made? You know, I don't know whether finding somebody who's been there and could have come up with a solution for the last few years is the best way to do that. So I start looking outside, and Ed Donatell, you hear Schlereth say yesterday, and we're going to talk to Tyler Palumbus in a few minutes, who's also in Denver, that his safeties loved him, that he did a lot to unlock some of their potential. Gus Bradley did it with Derwin James in the Charger system, and did it here with Earl and Cam, so all right. And then the last guy you probably point to is this, I think is a really interesting idea, is Sean Desai, because... You know, talk about young, 37 years old, and comes from a background almost as a professor. They call him the professor, so I don't know if there's room for him in Clayton in this town, but what did you make of that, of some of those names?
Yeah, he kind of fits in that pool of Dave Aranda, Brandon Staley, that is a thinker, right? That is just going to scheme and take those safeties and cover match and get you to progression read, pattern read, do some of those things. Yeah, that was an intriguing name to me. I said to you yesterday, obviously Jerod Mayo is getting head coaching interviews. Maybe he wants to stay in New England. Maybe he's the incumbent to Bill down the road. Who knows? But, you know, I like that. I like some of that New England style. I think Pete, as I said to you yesterday, has always been intrigued with how they're able to just morph week to week and truly take away another team's. I think that is, if I were to sum up, you know, man, some of my greatest frustrations these last couple of years getting on, and on Mondays after, how many times have I said to you, what did I say? I was going to quit Twitter or something if
they didn't challenge him,
Davis Mills has a career first quarter. And it's just like, gosh, you know, you're just allowing them to dictate. Take away their strength, make them beat you left-handed, make them beat you. And if they do, shake their hand and God bless them. But so many times the last few years, you were just letting that offense get comfortable, letting them get in a rhythm, letting them go up and down the field, letting them dictate. And it didn't matter if it was Matt Schaub, Davis Mills, or Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, Bill's scheme and his style is very different to that. And to me, that's a little intriguing. And a little, I forget who it was on Twitter, maybe Casey Masterman or somebody on Twitter said, I just want some friction, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15. He had some friction. He had some sparks. He had some intellectual friction. He had some competitive friction. He had some staff friction, right? Just some of that friction. You talk to small business owners, Mike, that can be super healthy, right? Healthy friction can be a good thing. And, you know, I think you've got an opportunity, whether it's coordinator or the pass game specialist or whomever maybe that coordinator wants to bring it, if Clint Hurt heads to Miami, right? There's an opportunity to, I think, bring some of that back.
Quickly before you go, and we can talk about this later today when we meet for our podcast, which will come out later. Did you hear this from Albert Breer yesterday?
I think the hedging from Russ's camp is not a great sign. Now, we'll see if they can work something out, but, you know, there's been an acknowledgement for a while of this could be the last contract he'll do with the team.
That last part. Mm-hmm. There's been an acknowledgement for a while this could be the last contract he does with the team, which means you get two more years, if that's true, that you would have two more years with Russell Wilson. Can you win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years?
Yeah, you can turn quickly in this NFL. Yep, you could win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years. You got a massive amount of cap space. You watch New England go from a terrible team with a rookie quarterback into the playoffs in a 1.9-3 this season. You got enough cap space. I don't know if you've got as much as New England had last year, but even if you're to restructure some deals, you can get pretty darn close to it, Mike, and you can make a huge talent-based turn, like a plant-based turn.
The best kind.
Yes, you can make a huge talent-based turn. And, yeah, I would say conceivably in 2 years you could.
Good.
You
then, could. Then they need to do that, right? I mean, like, if that's the case, then you need to put all of your resources into going for broke and making sure you win a Super Bowl and are right there in the next couple of years. Because otherwise, you will have wasted the time with Russell Wilson. So, good stuff, Brock. We'll talk about it on the podcast later today. Thank you, sir. We'll talk
Okey
later.
Okey-dokey.
All right, there See you go. Buddy. There's Brock Heward, of course, on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. All right. We're trying to get to understand where the Seahawks are at. Maybe we can find out who the second most popular quarterback is in the history of the Denver Broncos. We're going to go to Denver next. Tyler Palumbus, former Seahawk offensive lineman, works for our sister station there in Denver. He'll join us, give us a little take on what's going on here with some of the defensive coordinator candidates and a whole bunch more next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.